Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hello and welcome to Off the Beaten Track podcast. I'm your host. I'm not your host. This is the thing. I'm not your host. So I'm not really going to do any big intro for this. I'm going to just drop in the recording because all will become apparent. So strap yourselves in for a very unique episode.
It's Off the Beaten Track podcast on the Distraction Pieces Network. With me, Stu Whiffin.
Right, we're recording. Sitting opposite me today is the host of today's episode, Scroobius Pip.
Yes, I'm the host now, so I have to remember how Stu starts Off the Beaten Track. If I remember rightly, it goes, welcome, welcome, welcome to the Stuart Whiffin podcast, part of the Stuart Whiffin podcast network. It's about music and how it soundtracks our life. It's like Desert Island Discs, but with less listeners and less history. That's basically it, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, that, I've now got that recorded. That's now going to get used on every possible episode of any podcast I ever do again.
That's your new jingle, so there you go. Yep. Yeah, here we are. How's it going?
Yes, it's all right. It's all right. I just thought it'd be an interesting thing. We spoke about this ages ago. And what's interesting, before we get on to the nature of today's podcast...
Yeah, he's taken the hosting seat back, listeners. Go ahead.
I just did, didn't I?
go ahead, mate.
But the first ever one was you.
Yeah.
He was the guest on the first ever one. And I was so, so nervous.
It was weird, wasn't it? Because we've had loads of conversations, but because you were having to... Again... It's good now that you've jumped straight into hosting again.
Yeah.
And you were having to take the lead. And it's weird because you'd hosted Hardcore Listing for a while at that point. But it's with Chris. But you do tend to have to be the one that brings the focus and the drive. You have to be the grown-up.
Yeah. And it was just... I'm quite looking forward to today being able to kind of, you know, talk about music with you and not be so nervous. And obviously, and it's always nice to talk to you on a podcast and not be pissed out of my mind.
Yep, that's always good.
It's the case on the Drycast.
I always think on format podcasts, these are the most exciting ones. No matter what guest Brett Goldstein gets on, I'll be more excited to hear his films to be buried with than any guest he's got. Same on like Off Menu. They have some amazing guests, but I really want to know what Ed will choose as a dessert because he's not a dessert guy, and what James will choose as a starter because he's not a starter guy. So it's that kind of thing. It's the same on this. It's those who've listened for ages. This is as exciting as any guest because it's hearing the host's answers to all these questions.
Yeah.
Did you think about your answers when you were writing them?
Yeah.
And do you feel they've remained constant or have you changed, replaced any? Because again, you get guests on who'll say, how about this intro or whatever else? And it'll be like, ooh, you might have bumped my number one off or my number five or whatever else.
Well, it was really weird that I had, which by the time this episode comes out, it would have been out. When I spoke to Maxine Peake, she chose Puff the Magic Dragon for one of her tracks.
Brilliant.
Which, as soon as she said it, I was like, oh my god, that was mine. Of course that was mine.
Yeah.
But And there's, you know, every time somebody talks intros, you're like, ooh. But then most people will always say about any of these song choices that they could change at any given point.
Yeah.
You know, it's just mood, isn't it? Yeah. You wake up one day and you just think, oh, God, yeah. You hear something on the radio.
I was going over these questions and I generally, half of them, I've no idea what I said on my episode. Because they will have changed. Because there will have been ones that it's like, oh, actually, I'd go with this now. Or actually, I'd go with this. So,
yeah.
Completely understand that. That the more you hear, the more other people throw up, the more you're like, yeah, I back that.
Well, I'm going to kind of make sure I keep off the gas of trying to be controlling hosts. So I'll leave it to you explain the nature of today's episode.
Yeah, it's essentially going to be me asking you all the questions that you have asked so many people over the years, and finally get to hear your answers and your views. So let's kick things off with the song. I mean, we just kind of mentioned it. For you, Stuart Whiffin, what is the song with the greatest intro?
Well, I think when I initially put the podcast together, and it's long been probably my favourite ever record, and it's Be My Baby by the Ronettes.
Right.
You know, just as soon as you hear that dum 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 cha. Dumb.
Yeah.
I just think, right, my favourite record's going to start. And I get goosebumps. I've literally got goosebumps right now.
Yeah.
Just thinking about the genius of that record. But I've spoke about that record so many times and how much I love it. And I heard something the other day that made me just think, this is one of the greatest ever intros. And so I'm going to go with Fight the Power.
Right.
Just because, even without the speech at the beginning, because the 12-inch version I've got hasn't got that on it. It just starts with the kind of like the almost like the scratch, and then and then that beat just drops, and it's like when I think of like aggressive, hard sounding records and intros like Sleep Now in the Fire or something like that, which is just like straight away. And recently lots of people have chose Teen Spirit, which is an obvious Call of Arms kind of record, but I just think just the hardness of the drum sounds of Fight the Power without even hearing a word out of Chuck at that point, just when that beat drops. And I just think It reminds me of so many things. It reminds me of just going to a market in Grays and buying the 12-inch of it, and kind of I'd seen the trailer on the TV for Do the Right Thing, and seen like the kind of like the little intro skit of Rosie Perez just boxing, like to just that beat before the rap even starts, and it's like, this is so cool, like, you know, and just the whole, and then when you saw the video of them just marching through, you know, wherever it is in America, I'm not sure, but it was just the whole impact of Public Enemy, who I was, you know, definitely aware of and have been listening to Public Enemy, you know, long before Fight the Power. You know, I'm at an age where I was really lucky that when, you know, Don't Believe the Hype and, you know, Rebel and that dropped, it was like, I was like sort of 13, 14 at school, and it was like, this is the most exciting music that's happening at the moment, you know, the kind of what was happening in hip-hop. But I just think, for me, that record was the one that just took it to a different level for Public Enemy, I think. And I just think that intro's just like, as soon as I hear it, I just think, oh, man, like, it's just got a groove and a power. And, yeah, it's rebel rising and just, yeah, fires me up. So I'm going with that.
I love it. Do you feel things like that are strengthened when they have regular appearance in popular culture? You mentioned Be My Baby originally. The amount of songs that's been in, that's been in, that it's this amazing part, and Fight the Power as well, that start of Do the Right Thing. And when these things pop up, even a song like Fight the Power, it'll get dropped in on a documentary all the time, or on a YouTube video or something like that. And I think that really cements it with you, more so than, say, you went to see a band at some point and had the best intro you've ever heard in that moment, but because it's not then been backed up and backed up and backed up and part of pop culture, it drifts away a little bit.
And not just culture, you know, not just pop culture, but culture.
Yeah.
You know, look, you know, in the times we're living in now, that song's never been more fucking relevant.
Yeah.
And like, you know, it feels probably more relevant now than it was then. Do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
You know, Chuck's never backwards in coming forwards with his, you know, his thoughts on, you know, racism, oppression and stuff. And I think, you know, Fight the Power, you know, it's probably definitely been getting more airplane in recent times, you know, due to the fucking state of the world.
Yeah. Yeah. It's one of them where I've talked about it a few times recently because of a few of my songs that are political, that you always start out thinking, I want to write songs that are timeless, but then it's really depressing when it's something like Fight the Power that's timeless and forever relevant, because the point of it is to highlight change that's needed and to continually see Fight the Power relevant 30 years on is kind of saddening in its own way.
Yeah totally, but as far as intros go, I think it takes some beating, Pip.
Yeah, I think you're right. It's really good. Can you think of any that have stood out from other guests? I'm not going to do this on all of them, but because intro is one that is. Can you think of any that someone said that you thought, I didn't think of that?
Someone else has said the. I don't know. I think whenever you know, Nirvana would be up there for me,
yeah.
But it's one of them songs that, you know, it's like Mr. Brightside. It's like you've heard it a million times. So you almost take these songs for granted that they just, you know, you've all heard them so many times, they're just there. But it's like that, you should never overlook the significance of them songs and the power of them songs. And I had a moment maybe about 6 months ago where I went back and, you know, as you know, I've been playing Nirvana in the indie clubs for 20 odd years.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I'm sure at times I've actually got sick of hearing it.
Yeah.
But I went back and listened to the Live and Loud album, the MTV show they done.
Yeah.
And it just reminded me what a fucking band they are, how amazing his voice was, and just, yeah, the glorious racket they made. And Teen Spirit, you know, whatever, you know, Kurt's thoughts were on the production on that, I think Butch Vig just got that right.
Yeah.
And when he described it as like being in a house as it collapses on top of you when that drops.
Yeah.
And I was like, that stuck with me. And yeah, I think, you know, a few people have used that. And somebody chose one the other day from the band of Utah Saints. That episode's probably not out yet. But they chose The Source featuring Candy Staton.
Right.
You Got the Love.
Yeah.
And specifically that version, which is a hybrid of Frankie Knuckles' Your Love. Like, are you familiar with the ticka 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 ticka?
Yes.
It just starts with this kind of like arpeggio from the Frankie Knuckles record.
Yeah.
And then obviously they drop Candy Staton's vocal over the top. And that's one of them records that as soon as that intro starts, as a DJ in any club, indie club, house club, you know, whatever you're in, when that intro starts, and the same can be said for Born Slippy.
Yeah.
You know, both of them intros start and you just think, hands go in the air. Well, and it's like that.
Well, that's a question then. Thinking as a DJ, you've had Be My Baby, Fight the Power and Teen Spirit. All three of them, they're quite short intros. It's immediate impact and then immediate heavier impact afterwards. Whereas a Born Slippy, a few other things, I'm sure I will have, I'm not sure if I chose it, but things that come to mind are things like Thunderstruck and stuff like that, that are these long building, Rage had a few of them, these long building intros. Where does the excitement meter hit harder on dropping these in a club? Is it that more immediate or is it that build and build and build and build?
Well, I'll get to that.
Okay.
That build on a later record, because I think one of my choices defines what you're saying perfectly.
I love it. Well, I'll move on to the next question. What is the first song that you remember hearing that had an emotional impact on you?
The Star Wars theme.
Amazing.
Just because some of my earliest memories were watching Star Wars, and I can't remember. I mean, I was lucky to have seen, you know, got took to see it at the cinema when I was very young. I can't remember that. I can remember being allowed to have the toys afterwards, like being able.
It was on the re-release in the 90s, wasn't it? That you went to see it when you were very.
Yeah. But yeah, just and to this day, if I go and watch any of the recent Star Wars films, I'm interested in all the films, of course. But there's one moment that I'm there for, and it's just a long time ago in a galaxy far, far away, and then that punch in the chops.
I completely agree. Like, I had that with one of the ones that had been panned a bit, I think. I went to see it quite late, and I was just like, all right, I'll give it a look. I'm not that fussed. As soon as that started, I'm there. Weirdly, the same with the Jurassic Park modern ones. Exactly the same. I went into one of them like, I love Jurassic Park so much. I didn't know how this would be. And I've loved both of the ones that I've done since, to be honest, even though I've had mixed reviews. But on both of them, as soon as that music sneaks in, it's interesting, the relation in films as well, because I know you're a Rocky fan, and in Creed, they hold off, speaking of a build, they hold off so hard on bringing in that theme. And then when it does, you're just like... Because you kind of forget you're watching... Even though Rocky's in it, you forget it's a Rocky film because it's done very modern. Yeah. It's really nicely executed. And as soon as that sneaks in, it was like... Oh, my
God. It's so weird you say that, right? Because I watched Rocky IV was on the other night. And that's you know... I mean, aside from the greatest cinematic experience of my life, it's a questionable film.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
It's a bit tacky in places. But what I'd never realised until I watched it the other night, when he wins...
Yeah.
And they get they count him out and it gets to 10. It's all about ba 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 ba. They change the music a little bit, and like there's like notes missing, and like and it's I don't know if there was any kind of sort of contractual things there.
Yeah,
but and I heard it. I was like, oh, hang on, that's not the one they've used in the other three, and it's that euphoric bit of classical music that signifies, you know, good over evil and underdog wins, and like he's the best bit. I got goosebumps again thinking
and
about
I've
it.
Switched it out.
Yeah, and it not really. They tried to replicate it, but had like kind of done a copy that weren't quite hit the notes that you know that the ones from the previous films had.
That's so weird. But yeah, and Star Wars in and out. It's always
100%.
Yeah.
100%, and just that excitement and wonder of what was to come, and just that thinking, I know that I'm going to get, I'm not a fan of sci-fi, but just I know that I'm going to like just lose myself for a couple of hours here into another world. But I'm going to have to put another one in.
Yep, go on.
As an honourable mention, which is
Before you do, have you seen the video of the guy explaining why all the Star Wars films have got the wrong names?
No,
it's absolutely amazing. I'll send it to you. It's only like a minute long, and he explains why all of them, every one, would be better on one of the others, like story wise and everything else. It's amazing. I'll send it to you.
I'm trying to work them out in my own head now as you're talking.
It's so good. Yeah. It's going to annoy people now as they're trying to find that. But yeah, he explains them all, and just you can't argue it. It's like, yeah, that's how that felt. Why was that one called that? It doesn't make any sense. But yeah, go on, continue. I've derailed you there. Honourable mention.
So it'll be the first record I remember putting on and feeling an emotion. A sad emotion, I guess. And I guess when I ask that question on the podcast, lots of people instantly go for kind of something sad.
Yeah.
Like, whereas Star Wars wasn't. But I think if I had to choose a sad one, I remember my nan had a record player and just loads of like records like Jim Reeves and lots of stuff by the Dubliners and lots of Irish music and stuff. But she had the best of Dolly Parton. Which I used to listen to a lot, and I just remember a record called Coat of Many Colours that really struck a chord with me. But it's obvious, but it's Jolene. And I remember just hearing Jolene and just being able, as a kid, it was so storyboarded, the lyrics. You know, there was nothing cryptic in Jolene. Yeah. You know, it is what it is. And
it's overlooked, and because I saw a tweet recently that cracked me up, because it was someone saying, I hate that Dolly Parton's kind of come back round in being popular, and there's all these good-looking people singing along to Jolene. You are Jolene.
Yeah, you are Jolene.
It's meant to be a song for the rejected and the ugly and the ones who can't compete.
Yeah, yeah. Pretty people ain't allowed to like that. Keep taking exactly. Other people's men.
It's you. But yeah.
That song, and to this day, you know, if that comes on, it's a fucking incredible record. Yeah, so I think for one that I remember just thinking, oh, wow, that's heartbreak. That's
real,
like,
heartbreak,
that's loss.
Right? Yeah.
And so I'll go Dolly Parton. And it's so weird to say something really serious about Dolly Parton and not just go full David Brent and people say she's just a big pair of tits.
But she's amazing. And again, it was great. I always remember the excitement when she played Glastonbury and her winning everyone over and stealing the show, because she's just a consummate professional and has always toured her ass off. Performed her ass off, amazing voice.
Yeah.
From start to finish. I love it.
Oh, she's incredible. And it's like, you know, one of the first people to ensure that she owned all her own publishing, you know, just smart as hell. And, you know, been married to the same guy her whole life. No one even knows what he looks like. You know, has kept all of that out of the public eye, you know. And she's one of the most famous musicians in the world. And just played it right.
Yeah.
You know, just always owned her music, you know, just been really smart at a time when I'm sure there was lots of, you know, young female country stars that were probably being absolutely manipulated by the industry and losing all rights and royalties to everything. And she was smart. And yeah, Dolly, legend, mate.
I love it. Right, so number three, the song that reminds you of your school days. I'd imagine it'll be classical, right?
So it was all played on the lute, and
it was just something someone whistled. We only really had whistling back then, but yeah. No, go on.
Well, if it's junior school, without a shadow of a doubt, it will be Stand and Deliver by Adamant.
Right.
Just because I had no idea that Adamant was, you know, this kind of pioneering, you know, McLaren, you know, punk.
Yeah.
He just had a white stripe across his nose, made cool videos, and looked like a pirate.
Yeah.
And that was enough for me.
That's more than enough. That's enough for anyone.
And I remember just thinking, this was at a time when there was Saturday Night TV, there was a show on Dick Turpin. And I remember just thinking, why is Adamant not in Dick Turpin? Like, he's the ultimate highwayman. He's the dandy highwayman.
Yeah.
And I remember just thinking, like, Adamant was just... And it was cool to like Adamant. Even at infant school, I remember just thinking, like, girls fancied Adamant.
Yeah.
I remember, like, you know, it was... At that age, you know, there was... The two things that jumped out in music was Adamant, because of just how visual he was, and Madness, because of the nature of their videos.
Yeah.
They were, like, they were funny. And, you know, I had no idea what Embarrassment by Madness was about at the time. It was just like... Oh, they're them funny guys that make the nutty videos and they make good pop songs. But, you know, they've gone on to be, you know, one of my all-time favourite bands. And
well, House of Fun is the ultimate. I never realised what it was about as a kid. It's just, hey, oh, this is
yeah.
Hey, look at them dancing. It's like, all right.
Exactly. And, yeah, and it's it does remind me of school and friendships and yeah, to this day, my best pal, who I spent, you know, 40 years of my life hanging out with, you know, we grew up listening to Madness together, and there's just, I think, because, you know, maybe both of us have tried to pursue careers that aren't necessarily the most kind of corporate, maybe for want of a better description. Then there's just a line. Traditional, yeah. And there's a line in our house which says, I remember how we play Simply Wish the Day Away, then we'd say nothing will come between us, two dreamers. And I love that. And I just think them lyrics are just wonderful. And it takes me...
Was that in your top five of songs that make you cry? I know we've discussed that lyric before. Just as you were saying it then, I remember you saying that... Literal line. I don't know if it was in that or in another conversation.
Yeah, I think it was. Yeah, it would have been. It would have been definitely.
Beautiful, yeah.
But then you go to senior school and I'd love to say that I was listening to the Smiths and the House Martins and the Cure, but I wasn't. You know, at secondary school, I think when I was in like the probably fourth year, would have been 87.
19?
And. And I put the penny farthing in the bike shed, and then and basically, me and all my friends were listening to loads of soul music, and it was the early mutterings of the kind of Teddy Riley swing beat stuff, but it was more at the time the Terry Lewis and Jimmy Jam production, and I'm going to go criticised by Alexander O'Neill.
Oh wow!
Which was also my first ever concert. Was Alexander O'Neill
really?
In 1987. We was allowed to get on. Which is fucking crazy now, considering, you know, I've got a 14-year-old daughter, and the thought of letting her get a coach from Grays to Brixton Academy. but I remember we was allowed and we went, and, you know, he had a bed on stage and he would, like, serenade, like, a woman from the crowd on the bed.
Beautiful.
It was like...
A 14-year-old who's got a coach up from Essex. It was different times.
I still to this day think it's a brilliant pop song criticised.
Yeah.
And one of the things that I've realised, and I was obsessed with the Alexander O'Neill Hearsay album. I thought it was
Who
brilliant.
Got you into Alexander O'Neill?
I guess it was probably my friend Lee.
Right.
Or my friend Simon, or DJ Destruction.
Right, yeah.
And so two of them and me and my friend Cunt and the gang went to a bar in Billericay last year to revisit the Alexander O'Neill gig experience.
Amazing.
The Prince tribute warm-up was something spectacular.
Was that his name?
Then, but then Alexander O'Neill walks out and then sits on a stool to a backing track to lots of kind of...
An actual Alexander O'Neill or tribute Alexander
O'Neill? Alexander O'Neill.
Wow.
Yeah. Walks out in Billericay into this bar and performs Criticize. And then he also played like Fake, and he played I'm Looking High and Low, and If You Were Here Tonight, and all the Alexander O'Neill classics for those that are aware of his work. So Criticize, something I realized when watching it perform to a backing track is he don't really sing a lot.
Right.
So yeah. Are you familiar with Criticize?
Yeah.
So the chorus is don't just close your mind. Yeah. Ooh, he don't sing any of that.
No.
All he ever does is goes criticize.
Yeah.
And then that was it. And I was just thinking, that's an easy gig. He was just sitting on his stool, just saying the word criticize every couple of minutes,
I'll have
like
a look,
in the chorus.
I'll have a look if I got that, because a while back, I got years ago now, like 10 years ago or 15 years ago, I got a whole folder worth of acapellas, of studio acapellas, of like loads of classic soul, hip hop, all sorts, and that really highlighted how much of that there is. That there's these classic songs you think, oh, this will be a great one, and then it's just them going,
yeah.
And you can hear in their headphones the chorus and the song that you know and love, and they're not really doing that much.
And that was definitely hammered home then. But them songs remind me of, like, you know, the kind of a growing interest in kind of like trying to get sort of girls' attention and things like that at that age. And it was always Alexander O'Neill, Luther Vandross, Cameo, and they were the three bands like me and all my mates like at school would you know was into,
yeah.
And then that kind of led in, you know, around that a little bit after that was when the Teddy Riley stuff dropped, like Bobby Brown and Belviv DeVoe, and I can't think what other ones there were that come out of that. But
I love
yeah.
it. I love imagining all you lot all loving that, because I never had that kind of smooth music era in my upbringing. Yeah. And I know a producer of this podcast, 76, he did, because I remember when we started working together, he did open me up to a few bits. At first, I was like, oh man, you're into some of the... He's into the most amazing hip-hop, but then his R&B side was always like, oh, this is so cringy. And then a few of them be like, it's actually pretty dope. This is pretty good.
I've got mates that stuck with it, you know, and I'll listen to, like... some Luther Vandross and you know and I love it and absolutely love it purely because it's nostalgia and it really reminds me of a time. But then when they'll go, oh yeah, but like, you know, a few years after that, check out this track by Jodeci, and I'm like, nah,
yeah,
I'm all right, thanks, you know,
yeah,
like, but I know.
Oh, that's it, because the reason I asked was in my house, it was my mum and dad, and mainly my mum, who was into Luther Vandross, into Alexander O'Neill and stuff like that. So that's not because of age difference, it's just there's not that much between us, but that's why I wondered if any of that came from there, because I've got memories of Luther, but it was never me, it was on car journeys, and my mum and dad went to see Luther Vandross and possibly went to see Alexander O'Neill. I love it if they were on that coach with a young Stuart Whipping.
But you know, I remember like every morning we'd go to my mate Gareth's, and we'd cycle around, because we all lived on this housing estate in Grays, and we'd all cycle to his and then cycle to school, which was we didn't live anywhere near where we went to school, so it was like a bit of a mission. And but we'd always go around there, and he'd be finishing his breakfast, and he had like three VHSs, and he had like Alexander O'Neill live, Luther Vandross live, and he had like this kind of greatest hits of Cameo, and like. And if at any moment I hear them songs, I'm literally straight back to his house and them feelings. And especially them feelings if it was raining and his mum had come in and she'd go, all right, lads, do you want me to drop you in? And we'd be like, yeah. But Gareth, whose mum said she'd dropped us in, at the time, Gareth's mum had a brand new Skoda. And you couldn't be seen in a Skoda
in
1988.
Days, no.
Because people would shout Skoda at your car.
Yeah.
I would quite happily have sat in the back of the Skoda to avoid the 5 mile uphill, pissing down rain journey. But Gareth was like, "No, you're right. Thanks, Mum." And I just thought, "Oh, fuck's sake!"
I love it. And were they a legit videos he had of them, or because you touched upon it on one of? It might have been on a hardcore listing, but you touched upon the old days of Camden Market. Bootleg live gig videos, and the subject changed quickly, and I was excited in my headphones because I used to love the live tapes and CDs you'd get at Camden Market, but the videos were the one for me. I had Rancid ones, Green Day ones, Pearl Jam, all sorts, and always appallingly recorded, but somehow that appalling recording catches more of the energy of a gig than some of the most professional recordings ever that look just take away all the energy and just
I like to think that the label that put all them out was actually called Appalling Recordings.
Definitely.
No, not at that point.
Yeah,
at that
that's point, too young. I was going to say, as soon as you were saying your schoolmate, you'd go around and say, all right, maybe not.
But then the minute I left school, like I reckon in 88, and I was, you know, going up to MASH to buy my clothes, and De La Soul had dropped. But then it was I was getting really into like Depeche Mode and Erasure and the Pet Shop Boys, and that's when I would buy their Moody vinyl recordings.
I loved them,
and I've still got a lot of them, and they sound like you say, fucking appalling.
The excitement! If I'd been to any gigs in London, I'd be up Camden a week later, hoping that there'd be a video of the gig. And because I was a little idiot and I'd crowd surf like 10 times every gig, I'd be like, I want to see if I can see myself. I want to get a little highlights reel off of Camden Market.
Hello, I've interrupted the podcast again, haven't I? Sorry, it won't take a sec. All I want to say is, the songs that we're talking about in this podcast, if we can't play them, it's just because of the regulations regarding playing licensed music and such. So
if you want to hear the songs, just go over to Spotify and search Off the Beat and Track Podcast, and you can listen to all the songs because I've put playlists up for each of these. If you can't find it on there, I'll send links on all the social media accompanying each episode. So you've just got to press that one button and you can go through and you can enjoy all the songs that our guest picks. Anyway, I'll shut up, get back to the podcast. See you on the other side.
Speaking of going and buying stuff.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
What was the first song that you bought from a record store?
It was Video Killed the Radio Star by the Buggles.
Classic.
Mm.
Classic.
I still own it, and I still love it. I'm hoping one day to have Trevor Horn, who was basically the Buggles, on this podcast, because I do think he's an iconic producer. And yeah, that record was the first one I bought. The first one I owned was bought for me by my nan, which was David Bowie's The Laughing Gnome. And see, it'd be easy to try and be credible and say, oh, yeah, the first record I owned was David Bowie. But it wasn't.
Yeah.
And I guess it was, but it wasn't a Bowie record that's super cool. It's this novelty record singing about a laughing gnome. But, you know, a five-year-old me would have thought it was the greatest thing ever. But,
of course.
But the Buggles, you know, just it obviously it's just an absolute, you know, saccharine sweet pop record.
It's perfect. Though, isn't it? I remember I became obsessed with that after Empire Records.
Is that them or is that President's version?
No, it's them. It's them. I believe it was on the soundtrack. It's definitely in the film. And yeah, I couldn't get enough of that. I bought a Buggles album and only listened to that one song. Just skip back to that on my little portable CD player. I don't want to hear the rest. Let's just hear that one song again.
Have you revisited Empire Records?
No, I haven't.
I'd be interested if that holds up.
Yeah, I would. I watched a horror the other day that I had recommended. It's on Netflix. It's called Something 8. I can't think of the name. But there was a kid in it. I was like, who is this kid? And it's the young kid in Empire Records, the one that gets arrested for shoplifting.
Oh, really?
And he's got such a distinctive face. It's a few years on. I was looking like, I know this kid so well. But Empire was, it was that Dazed and Confused, The Doors, that we just watch on loop in that era. So yeah, but that's probably where I became exposed to Video Killed the Radio Star, because it sounded like nothing else as well.
It's a great record, and I'm going to throw an album in there.
Yep.
Just because I'm only going to get to do this once, so I want to just kind of get it all out. And the first record I got was for a Christmas in 82, I believe. And that was Now That's What I Call Music, the first ever Now album.
Yes.
And it's still one of my favourite ever records to this day.
Huge record. Just, and you had the guy who put it together on the podcast, right?
That's right, yeah. Super super interesting fella.
Yeah.
To have come up with a concept of now and launching it, and obviously, you know, making Virgin Records ridiculous amounts of money. And then to just kind of go, what should I do now? I'm going to set up, I don't like the Brits, it seems like a backslap, so I'm going to launch your thing called the Mercury Music Prize. And, you know, just
pretty
a fascinating
cool, right?
Dude, man. Yeah. And that album, now that's what I call Music One, or whatever you want to call it, that absolutely kickstarted my obsession with records and music, without a shadow of a doubt. I would study it relentlessly, the track listing, within it, it was a gatefold, and inside it'd have pictures of the band, it'd also have like chart placements uh-huh. and stuff like that. And I just got absolutely anorak about it. And without getting too old man river about all of these things, you know, and the digital format and the way that music changes now, because I've had this conversation on this podcast so many times, but I do miss, you know, that only being able to afford one record. So really valuing it when I got it and being able to listen to it whilst studying the sleeve. I love that.
Yeah.
You know, and that's probably nostalgia as well that makes that such a, you know, an alluring thing. But I do think that's something that he's maybe a little lost now. But, you know, we're seeing lots of vinyl popping up again now. So, you know, it's a catch-22, you know. There's good and bad in the fact that everybody can listen to anything they want, like that now. I think that's amazing.
Yeah.
I did like the journey of going to buy a record.
This is you probably won't be able to answer this because it's an out of the blue a very specific question, but do you remember the Now album or the era of Now that you first started to go, I'm not feeling this anymore?
I reckon,
because I remember Now did become really just cringy, and if you're a music fan, you're not listening to Now. That's just for the idiots who don't know about music. It's just the pop charts.
Yeah.
But it did start as this, this is exciting. Here's songs that I wouldn't have heard. And I remember being exposed to loads of kind of music. A lot of the smooth shit that I said I was never into was on the Now records, along with the other stuff I was into. So, yeah.
I think, for me, I didn't know anything about music. And that was... You know, that the Now albums was the first time that was a crossover of different labels release a compilation together.
Yeah.
Otherwise, it was always label specific.
Yeah.
So, excuse me. So this was the first time that they all worked together and put out this amazing, you know, I think it's like 11 number ones are on the first one. And so it was like you'd get to hear all the records that you'd hear on Top of the Pops, but you'd also get to hear ones that maybe I hadn't heard before.
Mm.
You know, I'd never heard Love Cats by The Cure before.
Yeah.
And,
wow.
You know, and stuff. I'd never, you know, I'd Kajagoogoo are on there twice.
Amazing.
You know? And so it was one of the things that I think, like anything, when you're young, a compilation is just a... gives you a cross section of stuff, and then by the time you kind of formulate your tastes and your things, you ain't got time for compilations featuring other genres that you're not into anymore.
No.
So they become very, very uncool.
So at what point did you transfer over to the more genre specific Hot Joint series?
I really wonder where you was going with that then.
Inside joke there, but yeah. Do you want to explain Hot Joints and its place in your life as a DJ?
So obviously Pip and I have run the We Are Lizards club night for 10 years, and I was in Poundland one day buying deodorant or something.
Oh, I mean, anyone who's not English would struggle to spell Poundland from your pronunciation.
Like a Poundland.
Poundland. Like, that could be anything. That's just noise.
And whilst perusing the £1 cans of Shaw deodorant, I noticed that they started stocking CDs. And most of us, you know, for the first 5 years of We Are Lizards, DJed off of CDs,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
And then we all sort of moved over into USB sticks and stuff like that. And... you were CD till the end, though, weren't you?
Yeah,
he was. And then I just saw this this CD on the shelf, competitively priced at £1, called Hot Joints, which had
was it Hot Joints 2? I think it was.
No,
two.
It was Hot. Was it, no, it was, the it first was Hot Joints. Joints.
Right.
Was it 2?
I think it might have been Hot Joints 2.
which just had loads of kind of chart-friendly sort of, I guess, early 2000s hip-hop and kind
R&B.
Of R&B on there. So yeah. I thought, I'll probably get away with that because I like a bit of 90s hip-hop. And, I mean, I don't think I ever played a track off of it, but any time we got into that DJ booth, I'd pull it out and just leave it in front of someone. So much so that Bill, for my birthday, tried to buy me Hot Joints 1.
Yeah.
And he could only get it on Discogs for like something like 40 quid. And he's like, it ain't that much of a good joke.
And, and again, Stu's using a heavy asterisk here of he never played anything off of it. He played songs that were on it, but just off of his own CDs.
Oh, yeah, I had them anyway, yeah.
numerous tracks. You're like, you'd always get defensive. I've never even used it. I was like, you've played that track. Like, yeah, but not off the CD.
All right. What was brilliant was we put Hot Joints made an appearance everywhere on Lizards Nights where it'd get put somewhere and everybody would pretend to burn their fingers on it when they'd touch it.
Yeah.
And like on the last ever night of We Are Lizards, like when a fighter retires and he leaves his gloves in the middle of the ring, as we played the last song, our final moment as a collective of DJs, Bill just popped Hot Joints in the little beer fridge underneath the DJ booth to cool it down.
To finally cool off those Hot Joints. And that's where it remained. I hope it's still there to this day.
I hope it's still there.
Anyway, speaking of clubs, I mean, I hope I've not spoiled the next one, but the song that soundtracked your year's clubbing. Well, Hot Joints Part 2, Track 4, Disc 2.
I'm going to go for...
Are you choosing your years as a clubber or years as a DJ? Because you've had two eras of clubbing, I guess.
Yeah. As a clubber, I would definitely go for Debaser by the Pixies.
Yeah.
Because in the early 90s, you would hear it everywhere. And
it's a long intro.
It's a
double intro, effectively, isn't it? It's the intro into then the beginning, yeah. The build and the drop.
It's a frenzied record, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's so good. I'm not a big clubber, and I'm sure we've spoke about this, but I have one memory of pure joy, and it was a weird little club called the Gas Club in Leicester Square.
Right.
On a Wednesday night, there was a DJ called Jeff Automatic, who was the main DJ, and the support DJ was a very young Errol Olkin.
Wow.
But it was just an absolute just early 90s indie disco. It was the first place I ever heard Killing in the Name.
Love it.
But I remember wearing a blue T-shirt, some green check shorts, a pair of fucking lilac All-Stars.
Oh, this sounds awful.
It was a bad look.
Yeah.
I had sort of long hair at the time, as we all did. And just dancing to Debaser, and I remember just thinking, this is the best thing ever. And I don't think I've ever had a clubbing experience as a DJ or as a clubber since then that has come anywhere near that. And
love
I just
it.
Remember just pure joy. But the record I'm going to go for is the record that harks back to something that we spoke about earlier, a record that sort of builds and builds and builds. And I'm going to go with Common People by Pulp.
Brilliant.
Because I think it's the greatest pop record ever made. I think it starts quite slow. I think the lyrics are fucking brilliant. Aside from the fact that I think Jarvis Cocker is one of the greatest frontmen of all time. And it builds and builds and builds. And then when that first chorus finishes and it just kicks then. But it's got to be the full version because the full version's got the best middle eight ever.
Right.
Which they never play on the radio. And every time it comes on the radio, I wind myself up going, they better play it. I know they're not going to play it. You better play it. They're not gonna. And they never play it. And I just go, oh, fuck you. And put it back onto Absolute 80s from Absolute 90s.
Brilliant.
They're the only two channels that ever work in my car, obviously.
Great, I love it.
But it's that middle eight.
You should just have the full version on CD in your little driver's side seat, ready for when they let you down.
Oh, no.
Sling that in. Let's listen to it properly.
That That middle eight, where it goes, you'll never live your life with no meaning or control. What is it? And you'll never understand how it feels to live your life with no meaning or control, with nowhere left to go. You're amazed that they exist. They burn so bright that you can only wonder why. And I remember just thinking, fucking hell, when I first heard that middle eight, and that bit where he goes, and you'll never understand, it just is fucking huge. And when they played that at Glastonbury, when they stepped in last minute at Glastonbury when the Stone Roses sort of split up.
Right.
And they weren't a huge, huge band then, Pulp. And that performance of that track was just one of the greatest live things I'd ever seen. And when they got back together and they played Reading maybe 10 years ago, and they've got Richard Hawley back playing guitar with them, and they play it, and it's that bit, the fireworks go off. And then if that's not enough, they then bring it down. I want to live with common people.
Right? Yeah.
And then it's then bang, I want to live with you, la, 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 la. And it's just a perfect pop song. I can't talk enough about however many times I've played that as a DJ in an indie club. I've probably played it, you know, 52 weeks a year for 25 years. And every time I put it on, I just get that same feeling of this is the best pop record ever made. And I think it's just masterful. Yeah, Common People, Pulp, Pip.
That's a great choice. Have you seen the episode of Brass Eye where he does a fake band that are essentially Pulp and does a fake song that's essentially Common People? It's pretty perfect. I rewatched it the other night. I'm sure at the time just kind of dismissing it, but rewatching the other night, I was like, he does a pretty good Jarvis. He does a very accurate and realistic Jarvis. But yeah, it's an absolute classic. And for a song that you will have played and heard so many times, for that to have not got old,
yeah,
that's pretty special. Because I'd say Nirvana, Rage, all of them have probably had periods where you're a bit sick of them.
Yeah,
as great as 100%. They are, a bit like, all right, here, it's the Rage part of the night again, or it's the Nirvana part of the night again. So
there's a couple.
Yeah.
There's a couple that, you know, things like, I remember just thinking, I never want to hear There She Goes by The Lars ever again.
Yeah.
I never want to hear No Rain by Blind Melon.
They were my highlights of The Brush for ages, and then my lowlights for years after, because it's...
But another one that came out probably around the same time.
No Rain, that's a great shout. No Rain was the massive highlight of the night, hugely, yeah. And then... Yeah.
You hear it now, and it sounds great again,
yeah,
because you haven't heard it for so long. But the other one, like Pulp, that I never tire of whenever I hear it, is You and Me song by The Wannadies,
yep,
which I think is just the sweetest little love song. Yeah. And it's twee as fuck,
yeah,
and then it's just got this fucking monster chorus that, yeah, is just like absolute sing-along. And to hold a dance floor for that...
But
like that, you know, people normally fuck off, but they know what's coming, yeah, and they don't. They think, well, I don't care about this bit. I know what's coming.
Yeah.
You know, it's worth the wait. So yeah, that's another one that still stands up, you know, on after hearing a billion and one times.
I love it. So next one, your favourite song from an artist from your home county, not country. I hope you've read it right, because loads of your guests don't read it right.
I know.
And you let them off the hook far too easily. You don't say, we're going to pause the interview. You go away and do some Googling. See who's from round your way. But yeah, who are you going for?
Well, it's awkward because I'm going to throw it out there quickly, but I'm going to go for something aside from you. But You Will See Me would be that. But I'm not going to just sit here and tell you, you know, what a great record you put out.
It's a fucking good song, isn't it?
Yeah, it really is, mate. It really is. It was one of them ones where, you know, as mates, you know, when one of us does anything, you know, that deserves a pat on the back, the best thing that most of us will do is just go like, yeah, that, you know, yeah, that was average.
We were actually mates at that point. Early stuff, we kind of half knew each other and so on and so forth. Yeah.
But yeah, I remember just thinking, oh, I've got to message Pip that he's just, this is a fucking belter, this is. And like,
it's one of the reasons, because again, as I say all the time, I can't stand listening to my own stuff, but I've had to a few times recently for either represses of vinyl, or I've been recording a few behind the album episodes to bank them for future. And we did the Tim
Burgess
album, a playback thing. And You Will See Me of my own songs, it's one of the ones I'm proudest of. And it doubles down my lack of desire to make any music again. Because that's a lot of, for a lot of people who are into my stuff, that is the song that they think is the best thing that we've made. And it's the last track on our last record. How rare is that?
That's a great place to sign
how
off
rare
right
is
there,
that? The last thing you ever make is people's favourite. It's normally the early records and then it gradually peters off. And then there might be one song, but other than that, the last song on the last record, for a lot of people, and for me, is one of my favourite bits or proudest moments. And
100%. Quit when you're winning, mate.
Exactly. So what are you going to go for?
and shout out to Dan as well. Yeah. 100%.
His production on that in particular is just so good and so brooding and such a build. I recorded a behind the album. It's not out yet. I'm not sure. I've recorded a load of backup stuff because I'm going to be busy soon. So I want to have them in case I can't record a podcast or two. But on the first a record, there was a song on there that I've not listened to in 10-15 years. Waiting for the beat to kick in, and it's a fan favourite, but because we never played it live, I loved it, and then I've walked away from it since we recorded it. And the beat on that and everything on that, it made me think of You Will See Me, in that it's such an accomplished and confident beat that it's insane and exciting. It's from our mate from Local. It's madness. But yeah, who are you going to go for as your actual, your home county choice?
Depeche Mode.
Obviously.
And a track called Never Let Me Down Again.
Okay.
Are you familiar with this one?
I don't think I am. I'm not the biggest expert on the Mode.
It was a single, but it was a single. It wasn't on the huge commercial albums like Violator or Faith and Devotion. It come out on an album called, I've forgotten that, Black Celebration. No, not Black Celebration, Music for the Masses, sorry. Yeah, it was on an album called Music for the Masses, which was the album pre-Violator. So Violator was the album that had Personal Jesus, Enjoyed a Silence, and stuff like that. The one that took them to just, you know, an even bigger sort of place.
Yeah.
but Never Let Me Down Again is the fan favourite. And there's a moment whenever you go and watch them live, the middle eight of this record is just this huge ascending string. And then Dave Garn will stand at the front of the stage with his hands and just literally move them from side to side like I'm doing now, Pip.
Yeah.
And the whole audience does it. And I'll send you a clip to look at afterwards. And I'd recommend that anybody just puts in Depeche Mode, Never Let Me Down Again live for that moment. Depeche Mode sell out fucking stadiums worldwide. And when you see however many, you know, 1,000 people doing this, it's insane to watch. And it's even better if you're in it. And I've been lucky to have been in it like maybe 3 or 4 times over
Amazing.
The years. And it's just, yeah. And when you're seeing it and you're looking at all of these, you know, say there's fucking 80,000 people at some of these stadiums, and you just think, they're 4 fucking lads that used to play Plinky Plonky Simps in the club that I work at. You know, they're from down the road, Pip.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? They're literally 5 minutes from your front door, and you just think, it's inspiring that for all the whole reason I set this podcast up, Pip, was to talk about, you know, how the area in which artists grew up in, you know, as played a part in their creative journey, and you know that the podcast, you know, has deviated from that a little bit as it's kind of just matured over time, but I do think that, you know, I'm fascinated, and I was literally speaking to somebody today about you and the fact that there's such pressure on artists, you know, whether they be comedians, musicians, producers, whatever, I've got to move to London.
Yeah.
And it's like, and, you know, you've never kind of wanted to do that. You've always said, I don't really want to. And I find that really interesting that, you know, some people feel that desire to kind of be seen and heard. You have to go to a city. And
I was talking to Maxine Peake about it today because I recorded a podcast with her, and she lived in London because she felt she had to. And now she's back up north. And she was saying exactly that because we were discussing the weird synergy that celebrity has attached to so many art forms. And people say, like, where Maxine had a big blow up recently with press and all negative stuff like that. And people kind of will say, well, it's what you get for being famous. You're under that scrutiny and so on and so forth. It's like, she didn't choose to be famous. She chose, her job is the art that she creates on screen, the amazing performances. Her job isn't being a famous person. And that was her realisation that made her leave London in many ways, because she was like, I'm there because I feel I have to as a personality. But in reality, my job is what goes on screen. It's not being in Soho all the time and having lunch with this person and dinner with that person, which is all great, but it's distractions as well. It's distractions from the actual art of it all. And yeah, I think that's a key thing at points of not... It's been a key thing for me. I always felt if I moved to London, I'd get way less done. Or I wouldn't trust the art that I was creating. I'd feel that I'm possibly doing it for reasons other than just here's what I want to do. I'd think I'm trying to impress someone or being over-influenced or trying to, yeah, perform.
I mean, we should point out that quite quickly, most of Depeche Mode fucked off to LA and Depeche, yeah. And London.
Of course, Bert Basildon, come on, let's be fair.
Yeah, no, absolutely, absolutely. Yeah, Depeche Mode never let me down again.
Did their locality influence your initial getting into them? Was it that they were a local band that drew the attention, or was it they were this huge band that you then got to go, oh, they're from up the road, shit?
I just remember seeing the video to a track called Policy of Truth and just thinking, Dave Garn just looked like the coolest fucking geezer on the planet. And I was just like, ah, and I just, at that point, you know, I'd already got into Erasure and the Pet Shop Boys and that kind of more poppier synth stuff. And obviously the back catalogue up to that point with Depeche Mode was all quite poppy. Mm. But the darker stuff then just appealed and it was like, right, I'm there enjoying this. And I just got, yeah, and then it got darker. You know, the album that followed with Condemnation and I Feel You in That, that's not many people's favourite Depeche Mode album, but it's head and shoulders above all the others for me. I like... You know, for me, I know that through listening to stuff like that and being obsessed with their record label, I discovered Nick Cave, you know, and discovered so much other music through listening. You know, I probably got into The Cure and started going to The Toothbrush because they were the places where I could hear these records. And so, yeah, the Depeche Mode also were a big gateway band for me.
Yeah, for everything there. Well, we're at the last question. So what is the song that many may not know that you want them to hear? I'm going to add a caveat that isn't by either Lilo or Serious Problem.
Oh.
well, so there's one song that I wrote I really think deserves a lot more attention than it ever got.
Well, I'm going to go for a record by a band from Nottingham called 6x7. And 6x7 had a couple of chart-bothering singles around, oh, let's get this right, maybe 98, Candlelight and For You. I think, you know, you might have caught them on TFI Friday or something like that. And they were great. And then they just made some fucking amazing records that come after that as well. Not that that wasn't anything short of amazing, but they made this record called So Close, and I just think hardly anybody's heard it. And it encapsulates everything that I ever wanted to do in a band. It's the record I wish I could have made.
Amazing.
It's the record that I was never accomplished enough as a songwriter, as a musician, to get anywhere near. It's beyond epic. It's huge. I've never understood how whoever produced it, I don't know how they produced it, because it just starts with this massive long piano intro and then it drops and it's massive, almost shoegaze, and it's like it's literally, you know, going above 11 and then somehow it goes to 12 and I'm like, how have they made that bigger? and it's, yeah, and it's basically got a lyric in it that it just repeats at the end, which I just think is one of the fucking best simple lyrics ever, and that lyric is, I'm so close to being more than I've ever been.
Yeah.
And I'll just I really fucking like them words.
Yeah,
I just think
beautiful.
Like that's so fucking cool. And he sings it like it's the last song he's ever going to sing. And it just sounds like, I can only imagine they were in the studio and it feels like it's being recorded live and they must all have just been wide-eyed at each other, just going, fuck me, this is just huge. And yeah, and I just think it's a real shame that that lots of people are never going to get to hear it. And so hopefully, yeah, a couple of people are going to have a listen there.
Where do you remember where you heard it first or where you found out about them as a band? Or was it their few chart-bothering singles, or did they support someone, or what was the...
So I bought their early singles, mm-hmm. and then I kind of lost track of them for a bit. And then I'd done this fanzine called Taste around 2002. I'd done this fanzine called Taste with this lad called Sean, and he was just a customer at the, you know, one of the clubbers at the Toothbrush, and he would come up and he'd always ask for kind of slightly obscure records, but not in a wanker way, like, you know. And then I'd play him, and him and his mates would just go nuts on the dance floor. And you know, this would be at like 9:10, so there was hardly anyone in the club, and they'd come early so they could dance to, like, you know, their favourite records played loud. So I was always happy to, you know, to do that. And then in the end, you know, we got chatting loads, and you know, he was saying that he wanted to start a fanzine, and I was like, oh, I'd love to do that. And yeah, so we started this little fanzine, and bizarrely, the first one we, you know, at the time, I was, you know, Ricky Gervais done us a really big interview for the first one, so we kicked off big.
Just casually drop that in there, old Ricky.
Yeah, but then at that, yeah, it, and it was just as 2002, like The Office was blowing up, like, so it was, you know, it was a bit of a last minute favour before he went on to, you know, megastardom. But yeah, and then so what happened then was we started putting out little mini CDs on the front of the fanzine, so we'd all kind of back and forth about burning these CDs. And yeah, my mate Sean just turned up one night and went, "Hey, listen to this," and that track was on there.
Oh wow!
And I remember putting it on, like on the headphones of the decks, and then I was like, as soon as it dropped, I was like, "I'm going to play it next." And I hadn't heard the whole of the record, but I just pressed play on the decks and turned it up, and I remember just thinking, "Oh my god, this is absolutely fucking incredible." And I still feel like that every time I hear it, and it's a fucking great record, Pip.
I love it. I love it. I'm going to sling in a little question that's a bonus. Just because I know you used to go to a lot of gigs and that. Have you got any support bands that stand out in your head? Because I always remember that era of going to gigs, I'd get so... Because I was such a music nerd, I'd get so into the support bands. And just... I was thinking of a few then. And weirdly, they all begin with C's. So I don't know if the promoters were just lazy with going down the list of available bands. But I remember... Cable, Compulsion, China Drum, and Cap Down supported everyone. Every punk band that played in London, Cap Down supported. But yeah,
Cap Down must have gigged more times than any other band.
Yeah.
So China Crisis done an amazing cover of Wuthering Heights, which I would tell people to go and listen to if I had to pick a cover. Compulsion, we saw supporting Smashing Pumpkins.
That's where my brother saw them. My brother saw them supporting the Smashing Pumpkins and got their CD. And yeah, I heard of them from.
They had an amazing single called Malmonarchy, which is a fucking absolute belt of a single. And do you know who one of them went on to become?
No.
Produce extraordinaire Jackknife Lee.
Oh, really? Wow. I didn't know that at all.
There you
go. It's such a weird thought now, because... That Smashing Pumpkins gig, my mum and dad, or my mum or dad, picked my brother up from the gig, and I asked if I could come in the car. So I just literally came on a journey to Brixton or the Astoria or wherever it was, at a gig that you were also likely at.
Yeah.
And I'm just outside in the car as a little child.
If I had to pick one, I would go for I would probably go for when I saw Erasure at Milton Keynes Bowl in 1989, I believe. They were supported by Adamski, Electribe 101, but the main support was Was Not Was.
Right.
And I don't know if you know anything about Was Not Was.
Not much.
So they had a huge hit with a track called Walk the Dinosaur.
Yep, of course.
And then they also had a huge track a long while after that gig with, was it Ozzy Osbourne sung it, called like Shake Your Head or something like that. A really weird record that was a massive hit. You'd know it.
Yeah.
It was like, but they were a really fucking weird band. It was like a pure funk band watching them. Don Was, it was like this fucking legendary producer. But they'd had hits with like Spy in the House of Love and stuff like that. And I remember the guitarist was doing like backflips playing the guitar. And it was like that kind of, if you saw like the Temptations or one of them really big like sort of funk bands in the 70s, that there was all sort of synchronized dancing. It was a weird band to have supporting all these electronic artists, like, you know. But I just remember thinking, fucking hell, they were amazing. So probably them and at a push, maybe seeing the Sisters of Mercy supporting Depeche Mode, and I'm not a Sisters of Mercy fan as such, but I remember just thinking, wow, this is a fucking good support.
Yeah.
But I'm sure as I think about, if I had to think about this question more, I'd come up with much better answers.
For some reason, speaking of Was Not Was, it reminded me that at some point I need to explain to you why The King of Rock and Roll by Prefab Sprout is one of the best bits of songwriting ever.
You will never ever hear me disagreeing with you on that or anything Paddy's done.
And my brother kind of he showed me an article kind of breaking bits of it down and all the stuff that's overlooked, and I listened to it about 30 times in a row, like over a week. It's, if I put on any music, it was that, to listen again and hear the differences. And it's one of them where it's always just been that stupid throwaway song, and then you realise it's a genius bit of beautiful songwriting rather than the pop song. Yeah.
Well, absolutely incredible.
There we go, Stuart Whiffin.
There we go.
You've done it. You've smashed it. How did it feel doing your own? Is it nice to get them off your shoulders?
Yeah, it was always one of the things I thought he's going to change constantly. And then, like, you know, when I spoke to you the other day, I was like, should we just get it done? And he was like, yeah, all right. And then even today, I had to do some sort of dad taxi stuff, and I was like running late, and I was like, if you want to do it another day, that's fine. Right. And
let's just get it done. Stop trying to back out.
But it's, you know, I always love chatting records, and it's always nice to chat records with a mate. So I appreciate your time today, Pip.
It's been great fun. And how's it been over the journey of Off the Beaten Track so far? Because number one, you get to chat records, and you love chatting records, but you've got to chat records with some of your absolute idols, like some people you absolutely adore.
And idols. It's been so much fun, mate, and in lockdown it's kept me sane.
Just
you said to me today, have you just released three this week? And I was like, yeah, because what's happening now is it's kind of
me and Pod Bible Adam, we were joking the other day because we're saying every time I talk to Stu, he says I'm recorded like up till November, so I'm going to take it easy for a bit, and then we'll say, anyone about on Wednesday for something or other, and you'll go, I'm recording five episodes of the podcast.
That was a one off that day.
I'm going to take a bit of a break. I'm recording five today. All right, cool. Good break.
Well, I've actually got my first one next week in a studio, which is going to be the first one in like 5 months.
Yeah.
So I'm sitting with the singer at the Vaccines.
Oh wow, that'd be cool.
Next Monday, so that should be a really good chat. He sent his records over, and there's some good chat to be had there.
Love it.
But yeah, it's been brilliant. Like, you know, speaking to lots of people from my formative years in music, you know, I've not put out the one with Miles Hunt from the Wonder stuff yet. That'll be coming out very soon. And that was just brilliant. And, you know, speaking to the likes of Carter and EMF and all of them bands that tie in with the things when I was talking about clubbing before I got into DJing, it's been brilliant speaking to these people, because they were the posters on my wall.
Yeah.
And then, you know, you touched on Maxine there. You know, as you know, when I set this up, I was like, Maxine Peake, Johnny Marr, they're my two dream guests. And it was great to speak to Maxine, and Johnny Marr, I mean, yeah, where are you?
He's on the list. You know. Let's make it happen.
He's on the list. And but yeah, it's been brilliant. And yeah, none of it would have happened had you not kind of said, why don't you do an hardcore listing podcast? And yeah, so I can't thank you enough for getting me into podcasting.
Oh, good. Absolute pleasure.
And supporting it via the network. You know, we're really lucky that the network's a lovely little gang to be part of.
Yeah, it's a good little group of people, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, there we go. That has been your Off the Beaten Track, Stuart Whiffin.
Nice one, Pip. Thanks, man.
Cheers, mate.
There you go. Scroobius Pip. Can't thank him enough. You know, it's lucky to have to have Pip as a good pal. You know, who's touched on it towards the end of the podcast. You know, that if it wasn't him, I wouldn't be doing any kind of podcasting thing. And it's become such a major part of my life now. Whether it be Off the Beaten Track, whether it be Hardcore Listing, or obviously the publication that me, Pip, and Adam have, Pod Bible. You know, that's all come from, you know, me and Pip playing records together in a club and him being a podcast pioneer and us kind of tagging along and forging some involvement and seeing, if it'll blossom. And to then sort of, return to chatting to Pip on Off the Beaten Track, not as a guest, but being able to, as a host and for me to be the guest was lovely. You know, who better to talk about my records with than my very first guest and pal. So thanks once more to Pip. Thanks to you lovely lot for listening and supporting Off the Beaten Track and helping it grow by liking, loving, sharing, retweeting, everything that you lot do to help, keep this podcast ticking along. I'm back next time, back in the seat of host again. It's been an absolute joy to be guest today. Hope you enjoyed it. I'll see you next time. Bye bye.
I've got an announcement. Save Our Souls Clothing. www.sosclothing.co.uk. Why am I telling you this? Because they're our official sponsor. Yeah, that's right. Go and check them out because their clothing is off the scale. You're going to love it. So they've decided they want to be our sponsor, which is amazing. And what I have to do is I have to tell you about why they're amazing. So here's a little bit of blurb. So they've only been going a year. And they're based in Southend-on-Sea, just up the road from me. They put the company together based on a love of tattoos and alternative music. And they've worked with some of the greatest artists around the world to produce these items of clothing that are as unique as you lot. All of the designs are printed using biodegradable, sustainable and water-based inks. In addition to that, they only print on garments made by members of Fair Wear Foundation. I mean, come on, great clothing and a conscience. Since going live in April last year, they've seen their audience grow massively and are now selling orders all across the world. And they were recognised by Cosmopolitan magazine as one of the best sustainable clothing brands alongside names such as Stella McCartney. I mean, that's quite a first year, right? So go and check them out because they've put a lot of love into supporting this podcast and I couldn't be happier. What else they've done is they've given you 15% off. So if you head over to www.sosclothing.co.uk, do a bit of shopping, see what you like, throw it in the basket, and then on the way out, put in the discount code BEAT15, BEAT15, and that'll save you 15% off. Amazing, right? www.sosclothing.co.uk, official sponsors of Off the Beaten Track podcast.
It's Off the Beaten Track podcast on the Distraction Pieces Network. With me, Stu Whiffin.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.